Good evening. Thanks for inviting me. The task that I've been given is to talk about sanctuary as an expression of Jubilee. And to begin, I want us to think about the context of the world we find ourselves in. It is a world where Jubilee is rarely, if ever, practiced, or anything approximating it is rarely, if ever, practiced. So it shouldn't surprise us that a recent budget proposes an increase of $10 per person on the planet, $54 billion, roughly $10, maybe $8 per person on the planet, for an increase in military spending. An increase in military spending by the United States, and the fact that we believe that's necessitated, is rooted in a world where we fear the other, where we, instead of having a spirit of generosity, are concerned about protecting, where we isolate ourselves from one another, where we cling to what we have. And this is not just a priority of a particular politician or president or regime or nation or party. Military spending is not new. The world we find ourselves in right now is not new. Starting with Peter, it just said it's being exposed in new ways that we have rejected far too often a spirit of Jubilee. So I think it's important to keep that context in mind as we think about how do we respond when that is the case. And there are a lot of responses from people I'm friends with and I am part of sometimes that are about what we're resisting or what we are against. And there's value to that. We should resist evil. We should resist manifestations of that evil. And yet there's a vacuousness to it if we aren't also able to say who and what we're for. And one of the things I love about the Economics of Compassion Initiative and Jubilee is it really begins with who we are for. That we're for our neighbor, that we're for everyone in our community. And I think the index that we'll hear about a little bit later reflects that. So it was just over 6 years ago. It was, I think it was Monday before Thanksgiving in 2010. And I was pastoring at University Christian Church over on the other side of campus at the time. And I was the lead pastor there, which meant that Thanksgiving week, especially in a university church where everybody fled Thanksgiving week, I was having my last day of work. And I was getting ready after a sprint to take about 5 days away with family and unplug a little bit. But before I could, I started getting these Facebook messages about a story in the Cincinnati Inquirer. And I ignored them and ignored them. And finally, I actually opened one up and read it. And it was a former member of our congregation that was teaching English in Japan that said, "This is crazy," linked to this Inquirer story, where I read a few paragraphs about a young man named Bernard Pastore. And Bernard at the time was 18 years old. Does anybody remember this story? It was pretty big in the news about 6 years ago. He was 18 years old. His parents were from Guatemala. And they were from the Cachical, I believe, or Mayan descent, Guatemalan, had converted from Catholic to Pentecostal in the midst of the Guatemalan Civil War that lasted decades. And they were in fear for the lives of their family. And they fled Guatemala and when Bernard was 1 year old. They spent 2 years moving through Mexico. And at the age of three, Bernard and his family came into the United States. And almost immediately, they applied for asylum. They applied for political and religious asylum. And when you do that, it meant they were here, and they were able to work, and they had ability to get a driver's license, those sorts. Obviously, Bernard, not driving at four. But the family was here while their case was being adjudicated to see if they would indeed be granted asylum. Bernard's uncle and his family also came at the same time. Well, the process for asylum claims is long, and we're hearing it's getting even longer. But 5 to 7 years later, Bernard's uncle's family is granted asylum, and his entire aunt, uncle, cousins are all citizens of the United States today. Bernard's family was in a different part of the country, a different judge, same exact case. They were denied asylum. They made a decision for religious and personal and fear reasons to not obey their removal order. So Bernard, from about the age of 9, had a deportation order on him that he didn't even know he had. He got into a fender bender in the Tri-County area right before that Thanksgiving. It wasn't even his fault. When the police asked for his driver's license, he didn't have one. He and his family are very passionate Pentecostal Christians, and when asked by the police officer if he had any identification, no. Are you a citizen? No. Are you here legally? No. He found himself within a few hours going from Hamilton County to Butler County and Sheriff Jones in ICE detention, and was on a fast track for deportation starting that minute. And they quickly moved him from Butler County up to Morrow County, which is about 40 miles north of Columbus, to get him as far away, as, you know, without going too far, but so the family and protests and all that wouldn't happen. I decided that Monday, as I was reading this story, I had a 17-year-old son at the time. I thought if my son was in difficulty, and by the way, Bernard's father is a minister. I was pastoring a church. I thought, well, I'd like other ministers in town to get involved if my son was in trouble. So I just kind of jumped in, and with his friends from Reading High School, where he was sixth in his class, the captain of the soccer team, they got involved. We started trying to get as many people of faith involved as possible, and spent 30 days trying to keep Bernard from being deported to a country, by the way, think about this, he was one when he left Guatemala. He had not been in Guatemala since he was one. Most of us do not have deep relational connections and experiences to the places that we haven't been since we were 1 year old. My family lived in Highland, Indiana. We moved up near Chicago. We moved when I was 2. I have not lived there since. If I was transported there out of the blue and expected, it would be it'd be some culture shock. Nothing compared to going from the United States to an entire other country. We were able to build enough pressure to create a national story around Bernard. It was right when the DREAM Act was going on. And the DREAM Act has become, it has become an executive order called DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. But at that point, it had passed the House of Representatives and was waiting to pass in the Senate, but they were trying to get the 60 votes and they didn't quite get there. But the night before that vote, Bernard was released, we believe, through intervention at the White House. And so we actually flew out for the vote, and I was there with a bunch of dreamers, a bunch of young immigrants, all of who have come to this country before they were teenagers, almost all of them. Seeing their pain and grief at what had happened, but then on the other end was in the basement of the Capitol building and seeing their resolve and their commitment to continue to fight. And so I tell that story for a couple reasons. One is the whole concept of Jubilee involves a restoration of property and place and right relationship, and an equalizing of those who are servants or set free. It's a reset every 49 years. There was an economy in this part of the world for centuries that involved folks in Central and North America with great mobility during different seasons, where, believe it or not, the Rio Grande was not viewed as a property that someone had to defend. It was viewed as land. So when we think about the indigenous people of this land, Bernard and his family have more ties to it than I do. But we don't think about Jubilee that way, right? So as we think about the context we're in now, where we are seeing a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment, anti-Muslim sentiment, a rise in anti-Semitism, and unleashing a friend of mine who is a pastor and leader in Arizona, young man who has been involved in the Latino community for a very long time and has had a couple bouts of cancer he's been able to beat, basically says white rage is metastasized in America right now, and it's being focused out of fear and loss, and there's a lot of pain there on people of color. We're in a situation where there are people whose families are in jeopardy. And that's not new. President Obama deported more people than anyone before him. There are a lot of families that were broken apart. So I want to make that clear. In December, when we began to hear a lot of rhetoric about the demonized, particularly undocumented immigrants, who were vulnerable in our community, we as a faith community, and Amos was involved in many, in fact, First Unitarian is a congregation that's involved in this, Christ Church Cathedral, a number of the congregations and folks who are connected with Economics of Compassion, decided that we could talk about what and who we're against forever. What we really needed to communicate right now to immigrants and to our entire community is who we're for. And so we decided to knit together a sanctuary movement that in some ways is rooted after another, another part of the Hebrew scriptures that talks about cities of refuge. And cities of refuge, I think, are connected with that idea of Jubilee, that there's a place you can go that is safe. And historically, not only in this country, but historically for a very long time, when you enter in to a place of worship, it is viewed as sanctuary, safe place. And in the United States right now, the Department of Justice has a policy around what they call sensitive areas, which are places where immigration enforcement, U.S. Marshals, will not, as a policy, this is not law, but as policy, will not transgress to serve a removal order or a deportation order on schools, hospitals, and places of worship. So we are trying to step into that space, and Christ Church Cathedral has agreed to offer sanctuary. 16 other congregations that range from Clifton Mosque to Temple Shalom to University Christian Church to Vineyard Central to First Unitarian to the Friends Congregation that housed people back in the 80s during the sanctuary movement have all come together and say, we're going to be in this together. Clifton United Methodist, another example. And thanks. I'm happy about it. The congregations are stepping up. And often, maybe sometimes getting some pushback on it. But what we're trying to say is this is not about this. This starts with two things. This starts with what does it mean to be faithful and to live out our faith in this day? And our faith compels us to offer sanctuary and make sure no one stands alone and no one feels excluded from the love of God. And two, rooted in real stories, real lives, real people. And I bring up Bernard because there is a scenario. Because Bernard is in this country right now. He still has his case has been deferred. It hasn't been eliminated. Should that deferment go away, those that have a active deportation order on them, like Bernard, could be in jeopardy like that. So these stories really matter. These are human beings that, from my faith tradition, are created in the image of God. I want to say one final thing, and then we can have some conversation. One of the stories in the Gospels where we see Jesus displaying the most passion is when he came up to the temple and saw people selling and trading and profiting outside the house of God. And the famous scene, and you know, we often think of Jesus as really mellow. The scene is Jesus actually turning over tables and driving people out because they had become a den of robbers. And Jesus quotes from Isaiah 56, saying that this house is to be a house of prayer for all nations or all peoples. What's interesting about that text is that in the very early part of Mosaic Law, there are all these guidelines about who is welcome inside the temple. Eunuchs were not welcome. Immigrants, foreigners were not welcome, often in terms of how people thought. Now, they were involved and invited to glean from the fields, and there were lots of justice provisions for immigrants. But the Holy of Holies was for the select. Isaiah 56, in fact, I'll just read a few of the words of this, because the prophet changes that and puts it on its head. And I want to think about this in terms of Jubilee and what does it mean to offer sanctuary. This is Isaiah 56, and I'll read parts of it. And this is from the Message, which is kind of the hyper-contemporary kind of translation. So, guard my common good. Do what's right and do it the right way. For salvation is just around the corner. My setting things right is about to go into action. How blessed are you who enter into these things, you men and women who embrace them, who keep Sabbath and don't defile it, who watch your step and don't do anything evil. Make sure no immigrant who now follows God ever has occasion to say, God put me in second class. I don't really belong. And make sure no eunuch is ever made to think, I'm damaged goods. I don't really belong. For God says to the eunuch who keeps my Sabbath and chews what delights me and keeps a firm grip on my covenant, I'll provide them an honored place in my family, within my city, even more honored than that of sons and daughters. I confer permanent honors on them that will never be revoked. As for the immigrants who now follow me, working for me, loving my name, wanting to be my servants, all who keep Sabbath and don't defile and holding fast to my covenant, I'll bring them to my holy mountain and give them joy in my house of prayer. They'll become welcome to worship the same as the insiders, to bring burnt offerings and sacrifices. Oh yes, my house of worship will be known as a house of prayer for all people. The decree of the Master, God himself, who gathers in the exiles of Israel, I will gather others also, gather them in with those already gathered. The fact that any person created in God's image would have it communicated to them that they don't really belong in our places of worship, in our community, in our circle of concern and care, breaks my heart. And I think a big part of why so many congregations of various faith traditions are stepping up to be part of sanctuary and are stepping in to be part of Jubilee is so everyone knows there is space for them and they are valued and they're included and they have so much to contribute to our community. Thanks.